A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
My Weird Prompts is a community-driven initiative exploring how AI can fuel curiosity and uncover the fascinating ways our world works. GPU compute for this podcast is generously provided by Modal. Learn more at modal.com.
You know, Herman, I was looking at a headline the other day that claimed rooting is officially dead. It seems like every couple of years, some tech blog writes an obituary for the Android power user. Usually right after Google releases a new security patch or a more aggressive version of the Play Integrity API. But then I look at the forums, and I see people still pulling their hair out, trying to bypass hardware-backed attestation just so they can change their system font or force a specific high bitrate audio codec. It feels like this perpetual cat-and-mouse game that just refuses to end, even here in March of 2026.
Herman Poppleberry here. And you are absolutely right, Korn. The reports of Rudin's death have been greatly exaggerated for at least a decade now. But I will say, the game has changed fundamentally here in 2026. It is not the same hobby it was back in the days of the Nexus 5 or even the early Pixel phones. Our housemate Daniel actually sent us a prompt about this very thing earlier today. He was asking if the juice is still worth the squeeze. He has been feeling some of those classic Android restrictions on his current device and was wondering if he should take the plunge into full root access, or if these newer, intermediate tools are enough to satisfy his inner tinkerer.
It is a great question from Daniel, because the landscape has fractured. It used to be that you were either a stock user or a root user. There was not much of a middle ground. Today, we have this weird, sophisticated gray area with tools like Shizuku and sophisticated Android debug bridge hacks that give you about 80% of the power with maybe 10% of the headache. So today, I want to really tear this apart. Is rooting still a rite of passage for the enthusiast? Or has it become a legacy burden that actually makes your phone worse in 2026?
That is the perfect way to frame it. We should probably start by defining what we even mean by rooting today, because the technical mechanism has evolved so much. Back in the day, you were literally just dropping a superuser binary into the system partition. You were modifying the actual OS files. Today, because of things like seamless updates and read-only partitions, we use Magisk, which is a systemless interface. It patches the boot image rather than the system partition itself. But even that is getting complicated because of how Google has tightened the screws on the boot process.
Right, and that systemless approach was supposed to make it easier to hide. But Google caught on. I remember back in episode 780, when we talked about the golden cage of the Google ecosystem. Rooting is essentially the ultimate attempt to pick the lock on that cage. But every time we find a new way to pick the lock, Google adds a second or third deadbolt. Herman, for someone who has not checked in on the scene for a few years, what does the current recommended setup look like? Is it still just Magisk, or has it branched out into something even more complex?
Magisk is still the king, but it is much more modular now. The lead developer, John Wu, went to work for the Android security team a few years back, which created this fascinating dynamic where the official version of Magisk actually stripped out some of the hiding features to avoid a conflict of interest. That led to the rise of forks like Magisk Delta, or what some people call Kitsune Mask. These versions are designed specifically to be more aggressive at hiding the fact that the bootloader is unlocked. Because that is the real battleground now, Korn. It is not just about having root. It is about pretending you do not have it, so your banking apps and work email do not stop functioning.
And that brings us to the biggest wall in 2026, which is the Play Integrity API. It replaced the old safety net, and it is much more formidable. Can you explain why that specific piece of technology has made rooting so much harder for the average person? Because I feel like people hear the name and their eyes glaze over, but it is the reason the McDonald's app suddenly stops working.
So, Play Integrity is not just checking if a file has been modified. It is asking the hardware itself for a digital signature. It has three levels, Basic Integrity, Device Integrity, and the final boss, Strong Integrity. Basic just checks if the software looks okay. Device integrity checks if the bootloader is locked. But strong integrity? That is the killer. It uses hardware-backed attestation. It is basically saying to the phone, hey, tell me if your bootloader is locked and do not let the software lie to me. In the old days, we could use software to spoof a passing grade. But now, Google uses the trusted execution environment inside your processor to provide the answer. If you unlock your bootloader, that hardware flag flips, and there is no simple software trick to flip it back. This is why so many people are seeing their banking apps or even things like Netflix stop working the moment they root.
It sounds like a one-way trip for a lot of people. If you root your daily driver, you are potentially sacrificing the ability to pay for your groceries with your phone. That seems like a massive trade-off. But then we have Shizuku. I have been playing around with it lately, and it feels like magic. It is this middleware that lets apps use system-level permissions without actually rooting. How does that work under the hood without triggering all those security alarms?
Shizuku is brilliant because it operates within the rules of the Android sandbox, just at a higher level. It uses the Android Binder inter-process communication mechanism. Essentially, you start a Shizuku server on your phone using the Android Debug Bridge, or ADB, either via a computer or through the wireless debugging feature built into the developer options. Once that server is running, it acts as a proxy. Other apps can send requests to Shizuku, and Shizuku executes them using the permissions of the shell user.
So it is like having a key to the back door, but not the master key to the whole building.
The shell user has way more power than a standard app, but less power than the root user. You can modify system settings, you can manage permissions for other apps, and you can even access some hidden menus. But because you have not modified the boot image, and you have not unlocked the bootloader, play integrity stays happy. Your banking apps still work. Your phone is still technically secure in the eyes of Google. This is why Shizuku has become the go-to for the intermediate user. You can use an app like Kanta to uninstall bloatware that the manufacturer tried to hide, or an app like Hail to freeze background processes that are eating your battery.
That seems like the sweet spot for Daniel and people like him. But there are still things Shizuku cannot do, right? I am thinking specifically about the things that really annoy me, like the way Android handles audio. We have talked about this before, how certain manufacturers will artificially limit your Bluetooth codecs. You buy a pair of high-end headphones that support LDAC or aptX Adaptive, but your mid-range phone refuses to use them even though the hardware is technically capable. Can Shizuku fix that?
Unfortunately, no. And this is where the pro-root argument still holds a lot of weight in 2026. Anything that requires modifying the kernel or the hardware drivers still requires true root access. Bluetooth codec selection is often hard-coded into the vendor implementation of the Bluetooth stack, specifically in the hardware abstraction layer, or HAL. To override that, you often need to swap out system libraries or use a tool like Viper 4 Android or James DSP to intercept the audio stream at a very low level. Shizuku cannot reach that deep. It is stuck in the user space. If you want to change how your hardware talks to your headphones, you still need to be the super user.
That is so frustrating. It feels like artificial gatekeeping by the manufacturers. They want you to buy the flagship if you want the high fidelity audio, even if the chip inside the cheaper phone is the same. It is that kind of corporate control that makes me want to root just out of principle. It goes back to what we discussed in episode 774 about escaping mobile bloatware. If I paid for the hardware, I should be able to tell it which codec to use.
I am with you on the principle, Korn. It is a property rights issue at its core. But we have to talk about the risks, because in 2026, the risks are not just theoretical, they are permanent. Take Samsung, for example. They have their Knox security suite, which includes a physical eFuse. The moment you flash a custom recovery or a rooted boot image, that fuse literally blows. It is a physical change to the motherboard. You can unroot, you can lock the bootloader back up, but that fuse stays blown forever. It permanently flags the device as compromised. You lose Samsung Pay forever. You lose Secure Folder forever. And in some regions, it completely voids your warranty with no recourse.
That is such a hostile move toward the consumer. It is like a car manufacturer putting a permanent black mark on your engine the moment you change your own oil. But let's look at the other side. What about the pixels? Google seems to be the only one still leaving a light on for us, even if they are making the software side harder.
Pixels are definitely the gold standard for this hobby. You can unlock the bootloader with a single command, and more importantly, you can relock it if you flash the original factory images. You do not have that permanent eFuse like Samsung does. But even on a Pixel, the moment that bootloader is open, you are in a diminished security state. People often forget that an unlocked bootloader means that if someone steals your phone, they can potentially flash a new image to bypass your lock screen or access your data if it is not properly encrypted. In 2026, our phones are our entire lives. They are our keys, our wallets, our identities. Is that extra control over a Bluetooth codec worth opening that door?
It is a heavy question. And I think for the average person, the answer is probably no. But for the power user, the one who is technically literate, maybe the answer is about finding a balance. You mentioned earlier that rooting does not necessarily make your phone faster anymore. In fact, it can sometimes make it slower. Can you dig into that? Because that is a common misconception. People think root equals performance.
Yeah, that is a legacy of the early Android days when phones had 2 GB of RAM and terrible processors. Back then, you rooted to remove bloatware that was literally choking the CPU. Today, even a mid-range phone has 8 or 12 gigabytes of RAM and more processing power than a laptop from a decade ago. Removing a few pre-installed apps does not actually give you a measurable speed boost anymore. In fact, if you use a lot of Magisk modules to skin the UI or change the kernel behavior, you are adding layers of overhead. You are adding more processes that need to run in the background to maintain those hooks. I have seen rooted phones with dozens of modules that actually have worse frame drops than a clean stock device because of the way Zygisk has to intercept every single app process.
So the performance argument is mostly gone. The bloatware argument is partially solved by Shizuku, because you can use apps like Kanta to uninstall or disable system apps via Shizuku without root. So that leaves us with the deep-level customization. Things like kernel tuning, advanced audio processing, and bypassing those hardware-level restrictions. Herman, if someone like Daniel decides he absolutely must root, what is the process like today? Is it still a nightmare of command lines and bricking risks?
It is actually more streamlined than it used to be, but it requires more reading. You cannot just wing it. The standard workflow now is to download the official firmware for your exact build number, extract the boot image, move that file to your phone, patch it using the Magisk app, move it back to your computer, and then flash it via Fastboot. It sounds complicated, but it is a very logical step-by-step process. The risk of bricking is actually lower than it used to be because of A/B partitions. If one side fails to boot, the phone can usually roll back to the other side automatically. The real danger is not bricking, it is the data wipe. Unlocking the bootloader triggers a mandatory factory reset. If you do not have a backup, everything is gone.
That is a big safety net, but the data wipe is a huge hurdle for someone just wanting to try it out. And then you have the ongoing maintenance. Every month, Google releases a security update. If you are rooted, you cannot just click install. You have to go through a whole dance to preserve root while updating, or you have to manually flash the new update and repatch. It turns your phone into a part-time job.
And that is why I think the intermediate path is winning. For most of our listeners, I would suggest looking at the Shizuku ecosystem first. There are apps like SystemU iTuner for changing status bar icons, or SwiftWalls for advanced wallpaper management. You get a lot of that power user feeling without breaking the fundamental security model of the phone. But, and this is a big but, if you are a true enthusiast, if you want to run a custom ROM like Lineage OS or Graphene OS to get away from the Google services entirely, then root and an unlocked bootloader are your only path. We covered that a bit in episode 7080, The Idea of De-Googling. You cannot truly de-Google a phone while keeping the bootloader locked and the system stock.
That is the ultimate trade-off, isn't it? If you want true privacy and true ownership, you have to accept the loss of convenience and the loss of some modern security features. It is almost a philosophical choice at that point. Do you want to live in the well-maintained, safe, but restrictive garden? Or do you want to live in the Wild West where you have to build your own fences, but nobody can tell you what to do?
That is exactly it. And as someone with a more conservative worldview, I tend to value that individual autonomy. I want the option to build my own fences. But I also have to be realistic about the world we live in. if I cannot use my banking app to transfer money, or if I cannot use my phone to verify my identity for work because the play integrity check fails, my autonomy is actually being restricted in a different way. I am being locked out of society. So, in 2026, the smart move for most people is actually what I call the hybrid approach.
Tell me about the hybrid approach. How does that look in practice for someone like Daniel?
Well, you find a device that is power user friendly, like a Pixel, and you use ADB and Shizuku to tweak everything you possibly can within the stock framework. You get rid of the bloat, you customize the gesture navigation, you use a custom launcher. You push the stock OS to its absolute limit. Only when you hit a wall that is truly preventing you from using your hardware the way you want, like that Bluetooth codec issue or the need for a system-wide ad blocker like Addaway that requires host file modification, do you consider the nuclear option of rooting? And if you do root, you have to be prepared to spend an hour every month fixing whatever Google broke in the latest Play Integrity update. You have to stay active on the forums. You have to be part of the community.
It sounds like a labor of love. I want to go back to the Bluetooth codec thing for a second because I think it is such a perfect example of why this matters. I was reading a thread on a developer forum recently where a guy had a mid-range Motorola phone. The hardware supported aptX Adaptive, which is great for low latency gaming and high-res audio. But Motorola had not paid the licensing fee to Qualcomm for that specific model, so they disabled it in the software. This guy rooted his phone, changed one line in a build property file, and suddenly it worked perfectly. He did not have to buy a new phone. He just reclaimed the functionality he already paid for. To me, that is the heart of rooting. It is a protest against planned obsolescence and artificial market segmentation.
It is a beautiful thing when it works like that. It is the digital equivalent of being a grease monkey. You are getting under the hood and making the machine do what it was designed to do, not what the salesman told you it could do. But for every success story like that, there is a person who tries to root their phone, loses their data because they forgot to back up before unlocking the bootloader, and then spends 3 days trying to get their work email to sync again because their company's mobile device management software detected the unlocked bootloader.
Right, and that brings up a practical takeaway for Daniel and our listeners. If you are going to do this, you have to have a backup strategy. In 2026, cloud backups are great, but they do not capture everything. If you unlock your bootloader, your phone is wiped completely. It is a factory reset. You need to make sure your two-factor authentication codes are backed up, your photos are synced, and your chat histories are saved. If you do not have a second device to use as a fallback, rooting your primary phone is a very risky move.
I would even go a step further. If you are curious about rooting, go buy a used Pixel 6 or 7 on the secondary market. They are cheap now. Use that as your playground. Learn how to flash the images. Learn how Magisk modules work. See how many apps break when you trigger the integrity flags. Don't do it to the phone you rely on to call an ambulance or pay your rent until you are an expert. The learning curve is steep, and the consequences of a mistake are higher than they have ever been.
That is solid advice. It is like learning to work on a car. You don't start by taking the engine out of your daily commuter. You buy a project car. So, if we were to draw a flowchart for someone in 2026, it would look something like this. Step 1. Do you just want to remove bloatware and change some UI elements? Use Shizuku. It is safe, it is easy, and it does not break your bank. Step 2. Do you want to do deep level audio work? Change your kernel for better battery life? Or run a completely different operating system? Then you have to root, but only if you're willing to deal with the cat and mouse game of Play Integrity.
And only if you choose the right hardware. If you buy a phone with a locked-down bootloader like a North American Samsung, or a phone from a carrier like Verizon, you are often stuck regardless of what you want. They have locked the door and welded it shut. This is why we always tell people to buy unlocked versions directly from the manufacturer if they care about these things. Even then, you have to check the forums to see if that specific model has a known path to root.
We talked about that in episode 994, the sideloading tax and the way carriers are making it harder to even install your own software. It is a slow erosion of ownership. We are moving toward a world where we just lease access to our devices rather than owning them. Rooting is the last stand against that trend. It is about saying, I own this silicon and I decide what it does.
It really is. And I think that is why the community is still so passionate. It is not just about the features, it is about the principle of the thing. Even if I don't need root every day, I want to know that I can have it. I want to know that I am the boss of the machine in my pocket. But I have to admit, Korn, even for a nerd like me, the appeal has faded slightly as Android has matured. A lot of the things I used to root for are now just built into the OS. Screen recording, dark mode, advanced permission management, even basic automation through things like Tasker, which now works great with Shizuku. Google has cannibalized the best ideas from the rooting community over the last 15 years.
That is the irony of it. The rooting community is essentially the unpaid R&D department for Google. They see what the power users are doing. They see what features are popular in custom, ROMS, and then they implement a polished, restricted version of it in the next release. It is a productive friction, I suppose. But it does make me wonder where we will be in another 5 years. Will the play integrity wall become so high that rooting becomes effectively impossible for anyone who wants to live a normal digital life?
I think we are headed toward a split. We will have the mainstream devices that are completely locked down, essentially appliances like a toaster or a fridge. And then we will have a niche market of enthusiast devices, maybe from smaller manufacturers or specific lines like the Pixel, that still allow this kind of exploration. But the days of rooting any random phone you pick up at the store are definitely behind us. The security requirements of modern banking and identity verification are just too at odds with the open nature of a rooted device.
So, for Daniel, I think the verdict is clear. Start with Shizuku. Download the Shizuku app, set up wireless debugging, and see if apps like Kanta, Hail, and SystemU iTuner solve your frustrations. If you are still hitting those walls, and you have a phone that allows it, and you have a full backup, then maybe consider the root path. But don't expect it to be a smooth ride. It is a hobby, not a utility. It requires constant attention and a willingness to troubleshoot at the worst possible times.
Well said. It is a commitment. And if you're not prepared to read 20 pages of forum posts on XDA developers when your phone stops passing its integrity check on a Tuesday morning right before you need to use your digital wallet, then stay on the stock side of the fence. The peace of mind is worth something too.
This has been a fascinating dive, Herman. It is one of those topics that touches on everything from low-level Linux kernel mechanics to high-level philosophy about what it means to own something in the 21st century. I hope this gave Daniel some clarity on whether he should take that plunge.
I think it did. And for everyone else listening, if you have been on the fence about this, or if you have a success story about reclaiming a feature through rooting, we would love to hear about it. Or, if you have tried Shizuku and found it lacking for your specific needs, let us know why. We are always looking for new perspectives on the power user experience.
And hey, if you are enjoying these deep dives in our brotherly banter, we would really appreciate it if you could leave us a review on your podcast app or on Spotify. It genuinely helps other people find the show and keeps us motivated to keep digging into these weird prompts. We have been doing this for a long time, and the community feedback is what keeps us going.
It really does make a difference. We see every review, and we appreciate the support from this community. We have done over 1,000 of these episodes now, and it is the listeners who keep the energy high. Whether you are a root user, a Shizuku user, or just someone who likes to hear us talk about tech, we are glad you are here.
For sure. You can find our entire archive, including those episodes we mentioned about bloatware and the golden cage, over at myweirdprompts.com. We have an RSS feed there if you want to subscribe directly, and all the links to our various platforms. We try to make it as easy as possible to follow along with our deep dives.
And if you are on Telegram, just search for My Weird Prompts. We have a channel there where we post every time a new episode drops, so you will never miss a deep dive into the world of Android, Linux, or whatever else we decide to tear apart.
Thanks for joining us today in Jerusalem. This has been My Weird Prompts.
Until next time, keep tweaking, keep exploring, and maybe keep your bootloader locked unless you really, really know what you are doing.
Catch you in the next one.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where our thoughts go from slow, slow takes to facts on cue. We change and follow through. My Weird Prompts.